It was during the height of the Civil War that President Lincoln often found solace in a midweek church service. He would quietly slip into the wings of the New York Presbyterian Church, where Dr. Gourley was the pastor, and he would, without causing any commotion in the congregation, come and sit with his aide off to the side and would watch and would participate in the time of worship. This proved to be, for the president on a number of occasions, a wonderful time of relief and release as his own soul was burdened almost to the point of breaking over the horrors and the tragedies connected with the war between the states. He said quietly in this particular midweek service, and as it ended, he continued to sit, and as the congregation left without knowing he was even there at the side, his aide leaned over and said to him, what did you think of the sermon? And the 16th president said, I thought it was well thought through, powerfully delivered, and very eloquent. Then you thought it was a great sermon. No, said the president, it failed. It failed because the pastor did not ask of us something great. A sermon that does not ask of us something great often is a failure. And the series that I'm bringing may fail for other reasons, but it will not be because I am not asking of you something great. And I know that even in the process of asking. I am asking that we be, as a student body and as a team of faculty members and leaders at Dallas Seminary, that we be servant-hearted people. That we be kind and courteous and humble, not only before our God, but with one another. I am also asking a great thing, that we be visionary in our thoughts regarding our relationship with Him who has made us and with Him who leads us. I'm asking you to think great thoughts, to dream vast dreams, as I have been asked in taking this post. And today I ask of you a great thing when I ask you to finish well. A lot of attention, and perhaps it should be, falls upon beginning well, getting started in ministry, making the best first impressions we can make. But I've come to the place in my life where I'm thinking more about finishing well than I ever thought about beginning well. Those men and women who have impacted our lives are men and women who are finishing well. Our staff of men and women at the church that I pastored sat down one day and made a list of people who are finishing well. Tragically, within a matter of months, one of those on our list had fallen. It happens all the time. It is to the place where it is at epidemic proportion. And so when I speak of determination, I'm not simply asking that we be people who have the discipline of durability, as Edmund once put it, but that we be people who are determined to go hard after God throughout life, right up to the end. Not with plans on some easy and early retirement. But whatever may be our calling and role, that we determine now to finish well and strong. Not just as committed to our Lord, but even more so than when we began. It's easy to be misled. It's easy to think that determination and doing well in ministry is really a matter of talent. or knowing the right people, or having enough charisma in your personality to sell yourself. Sort of getting the breaks and meeting the right people and having that winsome style that holds people as you speak or wins them as you meet with them. Or even that you be a person of prayer, as valuable as that and the other things I may have mentioned and haven't mentioned might be. I've even heard it said, well, I'm waiting for my ship to come in. I always think of Charlie Tremendous Jones' response, people are waiting for some ship to come in, they never sent one out. I think that's a good way to look at it. Ships aren't coming in, folks. It isn't waiting for the right person or the breaks or being in the right geography for you to succeed in ministry. And it isn't size. It isn't numbers. It is a matter of being faithful wherever it is God calls you. Just as no one suddenly falls, no one suddenly succeeds. It is a process of discipline over the long haul. As another has put it, it is a long obedience in the same direction. If vision is the ability to see above and beyond the majority, determination is applying the discipline to remain consistent regardless of the obstacles. Applying the discipline to remain consistent in spite of the obstacles. Our school motto is extracted from a verse of scripture in 2 Timothy chapter 4. And this brief mini-series wouldn't be complete without a reference to verse 2 of 2 Timothy chapter 4. And in that verse, the first three words form the motto and have formed the motto through the years of our 70 years in this school. Preach the word. That's the what of the verse. This is what we are to do. But immediately on the heels of those three words is the how. Be ready. If you will, be steady. Be faithful. In season, out of season, persist. Stay at it. Why is that important? Chapter 3, verse 1. Because in the last days, difficult times will come. One of my mentors used to handle that, savage times will come. Harsh times, hard times. The same word used of the demoniac in Matthew's work. Demonic times will come. When men and women will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, they will be boastful and arrogant and revilers. They will be disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, and on and on and on. It sounds like what you and I encounter regularly. That's why we must be ready in season and out of season. That's why it isn't a matter of personality. That's why it isn't just simply being winsome in the pulpit. That's why it calls for character. I'm asking something great of us. That we be ready in season, out of season. You make your list, I've made mine. When you're up or when you're down. When it's summer or when it's winter. When you feel like it, when you don't feel like it. When they're pulling for you, when they're pushing against you. When you've raised the money, when you can't raise the money. When it's early in the semester, when it's late in the year. When the subject is stimulating, or when it's dull as shredded wheat. When the languages come easy, or when they come hard. When the students sing your praises, or when it seems as though they're all yawning and checking their watches. The key is persistence, persistence, staying at it. I remember sitting on the platform of our church year after year after year after year. Often the tough service was the Sunday evening service, or services. We had five, 3 a.m. and 2 p.m. And I remember sitting there during that long period of time, almost, well, a little over 4 years while we were trying to get another building built to seat the people. I remember leaning over on the shoulder of Minister of Music and almost falling asleep. I was so tired. And I said to him, "What in the world have we got going here? How much longer are we going to be able to take this? This is about the living end." And he would say back to me, "We just got to be steady in season and out of season." Year after year. Decade after decade. That's what makes this faculty so great. They stay at it year after year. Every 4, 5, 6 years, a whole new group they get to look at, minister to, encourage, tolerate, whatever word you want to use. Persistence, persistence. Cynthia used to always lean over when we'd visit the seminary during the commencement, and we'd see these same gray hairs walk up those steps and take their places, and then the commencement service would begin. She'd say, "Isn't that great? Still here, still staying at it. In season, out of season." That's what makes for greatness. That's when you earn the right to be saluted. That's when respect is built. Not the flash in the pan. Not the great series of meetings that you hold for 5 days. But year after year, year after year, year after year. Ready in season and out of season, reproving and rebuking and exhorting and showing great patience and instruction. It used to thrill me when kids would come back. I had dedicated them as little babies. I'd seen them grow through their school years there in our church. And then they went off to college. They'd come back and bring their friends, and they'd come and spend some time, and they'd say, "Oh, it's so great to come back and to know you're still doing what you did when I was just a little girl or just a teenager here in the church." In season, out of season. When W.A. Criswell was holding forth Sunday after Sunday down at First Baptist during my student days, he told a wonderful story that I'll never forget. I wrote it down so I'd keep the details straight. He told of an evangelist who loved to hunt, and it was a friend of his, and he even had been in the man's home. He said he bought himself 2 bird dogs. They were 2 setters, and he put them both in his backyard. He had a rather large backyard where these dogs roamed and enjoyed life while they weren't on the hunt. He said one morning there came down the alley a mean, vicious-looking little bow-legged bulldog. He said he meant business. He crawled under the fence, and the evangelist said his first impulse was to hurry the setters back in the basement where they stayed on cold nights. But he thought, no, he'd teach that little bulldog a lesson. Hell, the thing scratched his way under the fence and came up on the other side and looked around, and all of a sudden those 2 setters were on him. And he says, they ran around all over that yard. Those bird dogs bit him, pushed him. He was yelping and yiping until he finally got back under the fence, and licking his wounds, he walked away, sort of shaking his head. Evangelist said he thought that was the end of it, but the next morning the little bulldog walked right back down the alley, dug right back under the fence, came up on the other side, and they went round and round and round, these setters, all over this little bulldog. More scrapes, more sores, more bites, and he comes back under the fence and gets back in the alley, licks his wound, sort of shakes his head. Next morning, the little bulldog came right back down the alley, went back under the fence. Evangelist said he had to go away for a few weeks of meeting, and when he came back, he said to his wife one morning, "Hey, what about that what about that little bulldog? She said, honey, you'll never believe what happened. Said he kept back, he kept coming back day after day, day after day. And now she says, you know what? Every time he comes under the fence, our two setters run into the basement on their own while he sort of struts around the backyard. As if he owns the place. That's persistence. Staying at it, staying at it, year after year, course after course, with not a thought of quitting. You stay at it. You work at it. It's hard. It's supposed to be hard. It's long. It's supposed to be long. It's all part of training for a determined kind of ministry where you, all alone in some place, removed from the sounds of this great chapel and the fellowship of these great men and women on your left and right, in front and behind you, when you all alone are then left with the memories of your years at the seminary where you learned to be ready and steady in season and out of season. I'm asking something great of you. It's not supposed to be easy. The only time I remember reading easy in Scripture is that his yoke is easy. His burden is light. Yoked to him, the task becomes bearable. Whether your calling is in the heat of Calcutta or the horrible slums of Brazil or the freezing, howling winds of an Alaska, or even more dangerous, the places of prosperity and affluence, where falling happens regularly. Wherever it may be he calls you, you will have learned the disciplines of durability. I have some verses that I had placed on my bathroom mirror at home, and when I go to that mirror, I read them over and over again. They have been splashed with water. Some of the ink is draining. They still stand as a reminder to me. 1 Corinthians 15:58, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor's not in vain in the Lord. You hear those three words? Not in vain. That's his answer to a determined life. Not in vain. Not in vain. Another is Galatians chapter 6, verse 7. Look at that. Verse 9, let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we shall reap if we do not grow weary. Let us not lose heart in doing good. Applied, let us not lose heart in taking the courses. Let us not lose heart in teaching the truth. Let us not lose heart, even when it is confusing, overwhelming, and at times borderline unbearable. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due season, remember, it's not in vain, we shall reap. We shall reap if we do not grow weary. Be there. Get involved. Throw yourself into it. The biblical term is endure. Endure. I have a friend in ministry in Northern California, Ron Ritchie. Some of you may know him. Many of the staff know him and remember teaching him. Ron has a rather clever comment regarding ministry. He says, I've discovered in my years in ministry that three-fourths of ministry is just showing up. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I'll be honest with you. A great deal is just showing up, just being there. Being there when you're supposed to be there, doing there what you're supposed to do while you're there, just in season and out of season. It's sounding monotonous because, folks, a lot of ministry is maintenance. A lot of ministry is maintenance. just working with the same people, working with them again and again, seeing them over and over, thinking you've got that marriage just about put together, only to discover that it blew up over the weekend. So you're back in the same room, working with that same couple, working with those same people. There are some folks in Fullerton that were there when I got there, and they were immature. When I left 23 years later, they're still immature. And that's the most discouraging part of the job, because faithful in season and out of season will not fix some folks. They just don't get it. That's all part of it. But we do not lose heart, for we are doing good. That's the assignment, not fixing people. You can't change a soul as hard as you try. You can model this stuff, but you can't reach in and throw the switches. They got to do it on their own. Sometimes you want to scream. Sometimes I have screamed. Hebrews chapter 12, before I scream. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. Here it is again. Let us run with endurance. That's it. Hupomone, abide under. The picture of a burrow loaded with the stuff of the journey. And he just stands there on those little spindly legs as that load intensifies and intensifies, abiding under. We run with endurance. Notice that the race is set before us. We do not set the race for ourselves. One chapter back, you will see the story of a man who did it. Verse 23, he is introduced as Moses. By faith, he was born, was hidden for three months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child. And please observe where he learned the courage. They, the parents, were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He was not intimidated by the court because his parents had not been intimidated by the court. He chose rather to endure. There it is. Endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Verse 27, this is the key. By faith, he kept the Passover. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured. I'm asking something great of you. James Russell Lowell put it best, not failure, but low aim is crime. The greatest thing you have to fear is not failure, it's aiming too low. It's expecting God for trusting God for too little. And by little, I don't mean numbers, I mean greatness, the lack of greatness. Ask of him great things. Our problem is not raising our hopes too high, but setting our sights too low. The pastor failed because he did not ask something great of us, said Lincoln. Moses endured because he focused on him who is unseen. That's the tough part. That's the tough part. If God would just manifest himself at times, it'd be so encouraging. Just break through the skies. Someday he will. But until then, we await it. If he would just appear in the room at some times and say, I'm here, my son. I'm here, daughter. I'm here. I understand what you're going through. I'm with you through this. But that doesn't come. And so you endure in season and out of season. You stay at it. And because he endured, as seeing him who is unseen, God led him from age 80, get it, to age 120 to lead an exodus and to shepherd a flock of over 1 million, perhaps even over 2 million people. Imagine that. When God speaks, he asks great things of us. When he spoke to Noah, he said, build an ark. When he spoke to Joseph, he said, "Forgive your brothers." When he spoke to Moses, he said, "Lead an exodus." Spoke to Joshua, he said, "Invade the land." Spoke to Peter, he said, "Feed my sheep." Spoke to Paul, "Come over to Macedonia and help us. Don't give up," because it was rough going across Asia. That was all part of the plan to get you to Europe. Be steady at it when you come to Troas and you don't know exactly which direction to go. Look up. Stand fast. Be strong. Steady. In season. Out of season. When doors close. When doors open. When he spoke to Lewis Sperry Chafer, however it was he spoke to him, he said, "Start a school." When he spoke to Jim Rayburn, he said, "Start a club. Get Young Life going." When he spoke to Dawson Trotman, "Get the Navigators underway. Bill Bright, get the crusade ministry going on the campuses." When he tapped Billy Graham on the shoulder, he found this reluctant young evangelist. And he said, "Take my message to the end of the world." He asks great things of us. When he speaks to you, give him your best. And so I say, endure. Endure as seeing him who is unseen. All of those I've named, and I could have named some on this platform, who have begun ministries that in their lifetime they'll not get the credit for. And some right out here among you. It isn't the credit that counts. When will we ever learn that? It's getting the job done. Endure, men and women. Endure even when conspirators seem to prosper. Endure even when the wicked seem to be winning. Endure when the critics won't shut up. Endure when classes aren't running smoothly. Endure when big people act contemptibly small. Endure even when the power in the White House and her husband don't do what you think they ought to do. Endure when you feel alone and forgotten. Endure even when your mate doesn't understand. Endure even when there are conflicts at home and you have to take time to deal with them. Endure it. Don't walk away from it. I'll talk about some of my own before this little series is over. This is no time for wimps. This is no time for the spineless. Am I a soldier of the cross, a follower of the Lamb? Shall I fear to own his cause or blush to speak his name? The song goes on to say, "Is this vile world a friend of grace to take me on to God? Sure I must fight if I would reign. Increase my courage, Lord. I'll bear the toil, endure the pain, supported by thy word." Of course, that's the plan. Don't ever let yourself believe that your age keeps you from accomplishing. Or that it's your sex. Or that it's your marital situation. Those are all rabbit trails that suck your energy. Each one of us has been tapped on the shoulder by the living God. And part of the plan is that you endure those days when it's hard. I close with a true story. It happened to me when I was ministering in Florida. On a number of occasions to a little Bible college there. First year I went, the president of the school met me, put his hand out. I said, "How are you, Lee?" He said, "Fantastic." Sort of could hear him across the airport, you know. And it was a little phony, but I thought it's not a good time for me to correct him on that comment. So the next year I was invited back and got off the plane and walked out in the terminal, and Lee was there with his hand out and a big smile. "Hey, how are things going?" "Fantastic!" By now, I wanted to throw up, you know, because I knew differently. Between the second visit and the third visit, which was my last, the school had just about faded. His wife had left him. His children were in disarray. The school had just about gone belly up. He met me at the airport, thanked me profusely for coming, had a whole different spirit, and I said, "How are you, Lee?" He said, "I am learning and I am growing, but I'm not fantastic." And I put my arms around him and I said, "Now you're talking." There may be a day or two in a given decade that's absolutely fantastic. But that isn't normal. And whoever tells you it is a liar. You are to be ready in season and out of season because life is growing and learning and failing and getting back up again and refusing to quit. That's ministry. Teach us, our Father, the truth. Guard us from the lies. Make us realists. And at the same time, without dimming our vision, may we be people committed to determination, a long obedience in the same direction. I pray for Jesus' sake.